Welcome to the Veteran Experience with author, veteran, and judge, Mark Johnson. On this show, we help veterans heal and to be heard. We share stories of struggle, of heroism, of the endless battle to preserve American liberty. We explore the toll that service can take on some of our bravest. Now, this is my introductory show, and I'd like to tell you my bona fides, tell you why I think I'm qualified to do this, tell you a little about me, and then invite you to keep listening in the future. Let me just say this. I get nothing out of this. I love veterans. That's what I get out of it. It's the joy of helping veterans. Now, I'm a Superior Court judge in California. For 8 years, I presided over the Riverside County Veterans Treatment Court. I have also backed up that court, so I've always got my hands in that court. Just sometimes, honestly, sometimes I need a break. It can be a tough court, and I want to tell you about that. I was chosen to lead that court for eight of the 11 years it's been in operation because I am a retired colonel of the United States Army. I've been company commander, battalion commander. I've also served a year in Baghdad, Iraq, and let's say I share your pain if you're a veteran listening to this. And what I am trying to do is record a podcast that will help veterans first, be some fun too, and also help their families. I've worked a lot in my job as a judge and presiding over a veteran court. I have worked a lot with families as well. I want to help them because I know this is this can be tough. Now, I feel today, let me give you a little of my background. I was appointed to the bench in May 2009 by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Roughly 2 years after that, the presiding judge came to me. Knowing my history, knowing my years of service, knowing I had served in Baghdad for a year, she came to me and she said, would I lead a committee to set up our Veterans Court? This was probably August of 2011. Over the next 4 months, I chaired meetings with representatives from county agencies, veterans groups, and the Veterans Administration. We held our first session of the court on January 5th, 2012. Now, I thought I was perfect for the job. I was a retired colonel. I was an Iraq War veteran. I understood the challenges. I understood the pain that our veterans can face. I felt I could draw on leadership skills that I had gained from company and battalion commands. I really, when you really get down to it, I saw my role as a judge expanded. Presiding over the court, in my view, would be a sacred trust between the veterans, the public, and me. I choose those terms because when I was handed the battalion flag in the 104th Division in 2005, that's what my brigade commander said to me, that this is a sacred trust, and that's how I viewed it. The veterans in Veterans Court would know I was there to help them regain their honor. We would give back to society together. I would lead from the front. Now, let me tell you a little how someone gets into Veterans Court. Well, basically, in short terms, they get charged with a crime. Our Veterans Court basically handles felonies. It's a felony court. You have to be on probation. And then it involves a intensive treatment for an 18-month period using a collaborative approach, something that was developed from drug courts, and it's something I'll talk about in some other shows, but using a collaborative approach where the one goal is that everything we do is going to better the lives of that veteran, to heal that veteran, to get that veteran better back on the road to rehabilitation. In fact, even we wanted more than that. We wanted them rehabilitated. That's what I was working for. And I felt with my job as the judge and also my history, you know, chewing dirt with a lot of the same places a lot of these veterans did, that these veterans would know that I was there to help them, that I was there to help them regain their honor. I felt very strongly as I started that court. Over the years 2012, 2013, my first stint, I actually presided for the 5 years through the end of 2016. But I felt that it's unusual for a judge. I felt I should be out there. I wanted them to feel that sense of giving back to the community, the sense of mission that comes from that. And we would have community service projects. I have to hand it to my wife, Kim. She was an angel. We worked side by side on community service projects with veterans who were convicted of felonies. My wife, Kim, is tough and wise, and frankly, I'm really lucky to have her, and perhaps I'll get her on a show sometime. But we would work together cleaning up trash in local parks. We volunteered in animal shelters. We actually went out looking for homeless veterans, and Riverside's got a lot of them, and worked to get them housing. We started the Veterans Court Ruck Challenge. It was a fundraiser to help the Reaching New Heights Foundation, which is a charity that assists veterans in finding jobs and finding employment. We would have, in that ruck challenge, four-person teams would walk for 10 kilometers, each member carrying a 50-pound rucksack. And we made it a requirement that veterans from the court had to either carry a ruck or work to support the event. The competition, I felt, would inspire veterans on their paths to healing. I was 25 years older, and my team, which was called Born to be Wild, although I'm thinking of renaming it to the Stragglers, came in last, but it didn't matter. Here I am, I'm in my mid-50s, and I'm carrying the 50 pounds for 10 kilometers, and it's like it doesn't matter if you come in last. It just matters if you're in the game and taking the pain. Now, I want to talk now what kind of took the wind out of my sails. I really thought I was onto something like miraculous here, because I could bring something to this court that most judges couldn't. I had judges actually come up and say to me, "You sure you should be picking trash out there with these guys? You forget they're all on felony probation." And, you know, I knew that was going to be a complaint, but it's not something I ever really paid much attention to. Judges told me I shouldn't be doing it. And I think most of them felt possibly it was violating some ethical rule that you're not supposed to, you're supposed to avoid the appearance of impropriety. I didn't agree with that. I didn't agree with it at all. I think I was developing the appearance of propriety. I thought I was doing a really good thing. And I thought what these veterans could see is I was out there leading from the front. And, you know, but really, I think the real reason was a lot of them were telling me in nice terms I was crazy. I think it was because they were basically thought, you don't do that. You might get hurt. Somebody may attack you. That it's basically fear keeping these judges from perhaps working like this. And I didn't buy a bit of that. I felt that my job was to be out there working with them. You know, I've been shot at, I've been bombed. I'm not going to say I have some of the door kicker experience that some of you guys do listening to this, but I can tell you what, I mean, I've been around and I've seen just how painful the military can be, see how tough it is in some of these places. And I did do a year of boots on the ground in Baghdad, and I was on the road every day, probably a couple hours. And so I've been through some stuff, and nothing was going to keep me off the field working to heal these veterans. It was the most important thing. And let me tell you, from about 2012 to 2015, we were doing great. We learned from errors. We learned from the errors, and we were starting to develop this program. It was coming from the ground up, and we were having good results. Some of them being, for instance, a recidivism rate around right at 12-13%. Now, if you look at the California Department of Corrections, their recidivism rate is About 75%, 70%, excuse me, about 70%. Ours was down, bordering right around 12, 13%. We were doing great. I was having veterans coming back to me after a couple of years saying how good their lives are because we worked to heal them together. Now, what really took the wind out of my sails is a veteran named Matt. I won't give his last name, but this I brought Matt in 2015 at beginning of June 2015. Matt had come home from war with an honorable discharge, traumatic brain injury, and a bad case of post-traumatic stress disorder. He was tough. He was muscular, 6'2", 220 pounds, a decorated Marine whose life fell apart after he left the Corps. He was 32. Now, I remember he was standing before me in court. I still remember the first day I saw him there, and he had really serious charges. He had kidnapped his mother. It was more like forcing her to drive him to an ATM to take some money out of the machine for about 5 miles, but that was a kidnap. He was looking at life in prison. The district attorney allowed him to cut a deal that put him on probation and took him into the court. I took him in, too. And I took him in because I felt he was a decent guy who had gotten off track, that he was a nonviolent person whose violence was related to his military service, the violence against his mother. But I remember he'd been in our program about 11 months as he stood in front of me in May 2016, and he was positive again. And he was about 11 and a half months in the program, and I said to him, "Matt, I'm tired of sanctioning you, man. What do I need to do to help you? I don't know how. What do I need to do?" Now, what sanctions are there things? It could be something as simple as getting a butt chewing, or it could be all the way up to jail time. Now, I still remember him that day. Here's this big, tough-looking guy standing in front of me like a six-year-old boy who's in trouble trying to, like, recede into himself. I remember he moved his lips and made no sound. Then he started crying. "I don't have a mission anymore," he said. I've worked with hundreds of combat veterans who feel that way. Their lives once had great purpose. They led men into battle. They had tight bonds with warriors who watched their six and returned home to a world they couldn't understand anymore. You know, so a lot of these behaviors that do well in combat, like hypervigilance and aggression, now get them into trouble. It's like this isn't the place for those things. But the problem is when your body has been so ingrained to react, these are reactions down at the real root level of our brain. When your body is teaching you to that, to do these things, to react in this way, it's not that easy that you just hop on a plane, get on the Freedom Bird, come back home, and next thing you know, everything's fine. These behaviors get them into trouble. And even worse than that, there's a thing called flashbacks. Flashbacks can become common. I've known veterans who the smell of exhaust was enough to send them back to Ramadi. I mean, imagine that. Imagine that the smelling exhaust and suddenly you're seeing your buddy blown away. That was Matt, was what was going on with him. That was one of the things. And what these veterans do is they turn to drugs to alleviate symptoms. Now, a lot of people don't understand why do people use drugs? It's so stupid. You know, you get addicted. Would you use methamphetamine, which has a really high addiction rate? And they use them because these things work. They alleviate symptoms. You know, someone who's suffering crushing depression, use methamphetamine, you're not feeling too bad for a while. But the problem is, after a while, you get to the point you can't even feel pleasure unless you're using that drug. And Matt had, when we took him into the court, and I knew how serious his problem was. I knew what a problem he had already. And I knew how sick he was, and I knew how much help we had to give him. I knew that he had an extremely severe methamphetamine problem. But I still remember that day, him standing in front of me crying, big tough guy crying, breaking down, saying, I need a mission. I don't have a mission anymore. And I remember I talked to the team. This includes people from the VA, the district attorney, public defender, mental health, probation. I was worried Matt was suicidal. I suggested putting him in jail for a violation of probation. You know, sanctions are limited to 3 days in jail in our program. A probation violation would have allowed me to keep him locked up for weeks. Now, I wrote a story about this, and some veteran had jumped on me saying, jail? Are you kidding, jail? Yeah, I felt in that case jail was the best way to, would have been the best way to protect him. I could have made sure he was protected. And then release him directly to a drug treatment program. He was on drug treatment program. He had already been to 5 by that point, only 2 under my watch, but 5 drug treatment programs. I actually wanted to put him in jail because I hate to admit this. To this day, it's a hard thing for me to admit, but I thought he might kill himself. And I talked to the team and I said that, but you know, it was a gut feeling. It was just intuition, and it's not like you can transfer that to people. Everybody else thought jail would be too severe. So I'm talking to a tough prosecutor, the VA, everybody's telling me jail's too severe, so I backed off. A friend of mine who's a retired Army Command Sergeant Major runs a horse rescue, and they have equine therapy, and I said, okay, we'll do that. And I remember I said to Matt, Matt, we're going to have you work with some horses, brother. And the VA will find another residential program. That'll take you a few weeks. We're in this together, Marine. Well, Matt never did work with those horses. 12 days later, on the 17th of May, 2016, he was found dead on the bed of a Motel 6 in San Bernardino, California. Chronic methamphetamine abuse had killed him. Now, you know, I never know with some of these guys, do they kill themselves or do they just don't care anymore? I don't, you know, the truth is, I don't know. I'm not sure what difference it makes. But let's just say that I hadn't lost anybody yet. I actually sent a lot of soldiers over to Iraq and Afghanistan. I never lost anybody. I had some that were maimed badly, but I'd never had a soldier die under my watch, and it killed me. And because, you know, I liked him as a person, I cared for him, and then he was dead, and I felt blamed myself for the longest time that I should have done more to, I should have locked him up, I should have hooked him up, that's what I said. But I tell you, a couple things helped me. I left the court at the end of 2016, and leaving the court gave me some time away, and I realized how much I missed it. Just, I had to have my hands on veterans, working with veterans, and you know, we've done miracles, but all I could see was that failure. All I could see was that guy dying under my watch, and probably what really pushed me to leave the court is I was up in front of a crowd at VetCon 2016. It was in the summer of 2016, and I was up there speaking. And they put Matt's picture up there, and I started crying in front of a crowd of 400. And, I mean, that was not one of my favorite moments on this planet, I can tell you that. I don't think it ever will be, but I remember my wife talking to me and saying, what was that about? She was in the audience. And she said, I told her how I felt. I said, I blamed myself. I said, I feel like I'm responsible. And she said, what? You didn't give him the drugs. He did it to himself. You know that, don't you? I remember she repeated it. You know that? And I said, yeah, I do know that. But I left the court after that. And But I came back in April 2019. I was reassigned back. I asked to come back to the Veterans Treatment Court. I was reassigned back to the court. And, you know, let me tell you a couple things I've learned from this. I learned that we have to always focus on giving veterans a mission. That the mission is everything with veterans. When they lose that, and that mission may be family, it may be friendships, it may be contributing to the community. When we lose that, we lose everything. We lose our purpose for being on this planet. And I also learned something. It's like I already knew this, but I had to relearn it, that you can't control another man's addiction. And I used to say that to my wife. And in fact, that's another thing. She quoted me that day after VetCon 2016. She said, "Aren't you the guy who says anybody who thinks he can control someone's addiction is dreaming?" And I said, "Yeah, that was me." I guess I relearned that lesson. And then finally, I learned a third thing, that I started viewing things differently this time when I came back. And I guess one thing I realized, that every day that you work to help a veteran is a great day. I hope you'll listen to my podcast. Over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to bring in Grant Gauci. Grant runs our Riverside County Veterans Services Office. He's a good friend. He's been through the system. He knows what it's like to have disabilities and struggling with the Veterans Administration. He'll talk to you. I'm also going to bring Greg Coker, who's a buddy of mine, retired Army Command Sergeant Major. We're going to talk a little in general about the need for mission. I also, Greg's black. I want to talk about some of the issues dealing with black soldiers. And in this current climate where it seems like race has made an issue everywhere. And I'll be candid with you, I don't like it. I hope you'll listen to this. I hope you'll listen to my show. Let me tell you one thing, I don't get 1 cent out of my pocket. In fact, this is a negative. I fund my equipment, I fund everything, I fund getting it out, this podcast out there, but I'm not making any money on it. I'm not allowed to anyhow, because of the ethics of my job as a Superior Court judge, but I wouldn't anyhow. I feel that my pay is helping veterans. I know too many people who've helped me for nothing. They wouldn't, in fact, offering them money would have been insulting. I want to do the same. And I really hope you'll listen to this podcast. I will do my best. I have a webpage, emejohnsonauthor.com. That's emejohnsonauthor.com, all lowercase. And I have a webpage in there. You leave comments on there, I'll address them. You know, I don't consider myself an expert in any particular area, treatment, rehabilitation, all these things. But what I am an expert in is overseeing programs, because I've done that for 8 years, and I spent a lot of time working with veterans. I'm an expert at overseeing rehabilitation programs and overseeing people on felony and misdemeanor probation. So please do not hesitate to ask your questions. I promise you I will give them due consideration. If you're a veteran, you need help, the answer is yes. Take care and God bless.